Hello and welcome to Jibe Talk in the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles and this week we look back at the RORC 600 race in the Caribbean. We talked to the skipper of the overall winner, Rambler. She also took line honours in a new record time. So a big hello back to the podcast for Kenny Reid, also preparing for the next Volvo Ocean Race campaign in Newport, Rhode Island with Puma. Now, the second boat home on handicap was British Soldier, the Army Sailing Association A40, and we talk about that remarkable project with a former Whitbread veteran and remarkable man himself, Lieutenant Colonel Nick Bate. All this and three-time Olympic gold medalist Ben Ainslie, looking ahead to the 80th anniversary Round the Island race that takes place later this year at the Isle of Wight. But without further ado, here are the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. The Aussies take the Rolex Far 40 World Championships as Transfusion comes home in a tight finish. Apologies, we had hoped to talk to someone from the boat, but time zones got in the way. Thomas Colville on Sodebo is still 1,000 miles behind Francis Joyon's world record solo circumnavigation. He is closing, though, but Banque Populaire has decided against making another Jules Verne trophy attempt this winter. In the Barcelona World Race, a real battle royal is developing between the French on Verbeek Paprec 3 and the Spanish on Mapfrey. Watch this space. Group Edmond de Rothschild take the honours in the first round of the Extreme Sailing Series in Oman, while the Volvo Ocean Race Special Edition cars will be launched at the Geneva Motor Show on March the 3rd. Well, joined by a man we know very well on the Volvo Sailing Podcast, Puma skipper Ken Reid. Puma powered by Berg Propulsion, I should say, Ken Reid. But first, Kenny, if we could... you were off on Rambler and rather demolished the fleet in the RORC 600 in the West Indies, I understand.
Yeah, it was quite a fun little trip. Quick trip. It's one of the quicker 600 mile races I think anybody's ever done. But the boat is nothing short of spectacular, and it's been a long time coming for this boat. And it's a wonderful, not only is it a great program, great owners, George David and Alex Jackson, but, great opportunity, obviously, for us as a team just to go sail together, sail on a big boat, work on our communication a little bit, work on, to try to sort out who does what really well, a bit of specialties, and go sailing. Quite frankly, we haven't been sailing much lately. We've been working so much on just trying to get this new boat organized. We haven't been sailing much. So everything combined, it was a great trip. And the icing on the cake is obviously doing well and breaking a record and winning the race on corrected time as well. So what the heck? No, there's no downside here, that's for sure.
The sailing conditions sounded fantastic. You didn't sound as if you dropped much below 20 knots for the entire trip. And one or two watched in envy as you disappeared into the distance early on.
Yeah, it was a nice test to be able to go up against a great boat like Leopard, very well sailed, and obviously held the record for this race in the past. So that was a nice little benchmark, first of all, and sure enough, Rambler 100 did drop them pretty quick on the horizon. So there were certainly some smiles in the first 3-4 hours of the race. There were definitely some smiles, but the Achilles heel of this boat has always been trying to keep it in one piece, and the team, the designers, the engineers really worked hard to kind of rebuild what we thought were some weak areas in the boat, and so sure enough, you keep a boat like this in one piece, it's going to go shatter records, and that's a nice option. And with these speeds and the loads, it's a bloody big boat, and it's really amazing. You go sail a boat like this, and before you know it, you're just sailing it like a regular boat. At first, any boat this size is intimidating. It's only human nature. But before you know it, you're just sailing it like a normal boat, and then you get back on a 70, and it feels like you're in a laser. You know, it just feels like you're in a bloody dinghy. So it's good for us. This is just, there's no downside to a program like this for the Puma team. It's just all good.
So for those who don't know, did you have many of the Puma guys with you aboard Rambler?
Yeah, every single one. Every one. You know, everybody pretty much in the positions that they would be holding on the 70-footer. And, you know, the only difference is we're another 10 guys kicking around to help you do some work. Lord only knows you need some of those guys every time you move a sail. It's essentially it's six people to do anything on the boat. Just to move a sail from the cabin or the cockpit forward, it's essentially six people. Now, really, the big difference between a boat like this and a Volvo 70 is manual power versus push-button power. You know, so really the only thing that isn't apples for apples on a boat like this is it's kind of a nice feature, is you want to trim a sail, you push a button rather than have all your buddies hop on a set of handles and start grinding essentially from the beginning of a 39,000 race to the end of a 39,000 mile race. So the push buttons are a nice feature, but it's something we're going to have to try to get out of our minds here pretty quick.
Now, Kenny, let's move on to the bloody dinghy. How is the Puma boat shaping up for the next race?
Yeah, no, it's great. It's been a really good experience. Brad Jackson has been kind of the sailing side person in charge of the project, and combined with, you know, the all the mass folks at Hall, the North Sales guys, and then of course Juan K's office, all the engineers. He's had quite an organizational effort in place to try to put all those pieces together. So you know, it's been a great experience. Tim Hackett is kind of running. He runs our shoreside operations, and he's really. There's two guys in charge of the build, Brandon Lyon and Tim Hackett, and they're just doing a spectacular job. You know, just details. It's all about details. It's all about making sure that this thing comes out exactly as designed. And it's hard. It's you know, the new rule and the weights, the structures, the keel weights, the bulb weights, it's different from last time. And it's, I think it's going to be harder to get this boat down to weight than it's ever been, down to the minimum weight than it's ever been before. And, so you got to have quality guys that you hope can pull it all off, and so far so good. I think these guys are as good as you can find, and we're really, really pleased.
Final thought, Kenny. When will you be sailing in anger, if you like?
Well, the goal is really towards the middle of April, we hope, middle end of April. It's still pretty cold up here that time of year, so it depends on how finished we can get this boat in the shed and how much work has to be done outside the shed. So, you know, I'd say middle of April, if we can be sailing, like you said, if we can be sailing in anger by May 1st, I think we're doing well. And it's pretty darn close to what the schedule was when we first started the thing. So, and when you see all the parts and pieces of the puzzle that go together in a boat like this, and to think it's going to come out within a week or so of designed build, it's almost a miracle. It shows how good these guys are at their job, and I can only say so far, just with the design process and the build process, we couldn't be more pleased. But the proof is in the pudding here. We got to see if this thing is fast, and hopefully middle of April we get to do that.
Well, congratulations to Kenny Reed and all aboard Rambler. But also, we do have to give hearty congratulations to the remarkable British soldier, the Army Sailing Association A40. And I caught up with all the latest news and how the campaign went with the man behind it all, Lieutenant Colonel Nick Bate.
It was quite a blast. The whole race was, phenomenally exciting and great fun in great warm weather. Very wet, very windy, and you know, it gave us a few surprises, but yeah, huge amount of fun. But how did it come about? Well, really, I mean, it was, we've had this Archambault 40 for the last since 2008, and, you know, we're keen on just really doing the offshore races, the Rourke series, and we've done, you know, the Rourke series since we had the boat, very much doing the offshore. It's really much in tune with what Army ethos of team, you know, teamwork, far from outside support in adverse conditions is all about. So we did the Rourke series. We came second overall in Rourke for two out of the last 3 years. I mean, in 2008, 2010. But when the Atlantic Ocean Racing series was proposed, I just said to my boss, "I think that's the sort of thing we should be doing." And I couldn't believe it when he said, "Yeah, okay then." So I said, "Well," he said, "What's it going to cost?" I said, "Well, actually, it's going to cost no more than what it normally costs us to run the boat, which is always on a shoestring." We're not publicly funded, as a lot of people seem to suggest. "Oh, is that my taxpayers' money going on that?" And the answer is no. The boat's funded partly by some very generous sponsors like Fujitsu, but also by soldiers and their own money. You know, Army Sports Lottery, which soldiers contribute to, help us out enormously, as do a number of charitable trusts. So, but we do run it on a shoestring in comparison to most of the other boats we race against. But, you know, what's it going to cost us? Well, not much more, because the guys that are racing this boat, and it's pretty much a different crew each race, are all people coming back from operational tours in their own time, or, you know, when they're not on op tour. And they're very keen to pay the money for their own airfare to get out there and do these events. So I just thought, well, let's go and do it. So we did the Caribbean 600, and we're going to do the Annapolis Newport race. We'll do the Newport Regatta as a sort of quick throw-in, before then doing the Transat, the New York Yacht Club, you know, Newport to Lizard Transat. Again, we'll be the smallest boat in the fleet. I think they've actually allowed us into the race, even though they set a minimum 40-foot overall length, and we're actually 39'2", even though we're called an Archambault 40. So we'll do that, and then we'll do the Fastnet, and then we'll do the Disco race, which I think will be a pretty cracking season.
So not much on there, really.
No.
Nick, how did you say that you get different crews for each event? How do you sort of find out who's interested in sailing, who wants to do it? Are these experienced sailors who then join the Army, or are these newcomers? How does it work?
It's a bit of all of those, actually. I mean, I've got a core number of, you know, people I can rely on, I can call on to say, "Come on, let's do this." One of the guys that did the 600, he's the guy I did the Whitbread with in 89. You know, we were all new soldiers then. There's a few others that have done some of the sort of long-distance work that we are, you know, from our Joint Services Adventurous Sail Training Centre, and they've done some, you know, legs on these Challenge 67, the old Che Blythe boats. And, you know, they've learned as novices. People have joined the Army and gone sailing as part of adventure training, thought, "Oh, I like this," and they've taken it up a bit further, and, you know, they've just come racing with us. But by and large, yeah, it's people that have already got us a bit of a sailing bent. But it is a complete mix from complete beginners. We even had two complete novices from the Antiguan Coast Guard join us for the Caribbean 600. The Antigua and Barbuda Defence Force had really helped us in providing moorings at Nelson's Dockyard and just getting things done for us in Antigua. And so I said, "Well, quid pro quo, we'll give you two crew slots." And they sent two complete novices who had never been on a sailing yacht before, but they had a blast. And by the end of it, you know, they had a fair idea of what was going on, but initially I think it was quite a shock.
I did hear that those two guys actually didn't know it was a non-stop race, and they were off for 600 miles without knowing it was all in one go. Is that true?
Yeah. When they first volunteered and put their hands up for it, they were rather under the impression, yeah, it was a stopping race at each island. Probably have a few beers on the way. They were quite surprised. But they were great. They really enjoyed it. But I think that was all part of, you know, we were going over there in a different format, a different budget to the other big boats. And we, you know, I quite unashamedly will use service sources and resources wherever I can. And I'd written to the Chief of Defence of Antigua, see what he could do, and he helped us out, so we helped them out. And we're doing the same when we go up to Annapolis. The Naval Academy in Annapolis have been really helpful. Because, you know, we're using soldiers who are on return from op tours. We've got a couple of guys who are amputees. One guy in particular, Chris Herbert, who, you know, he was shot in the leg in Afghanistan, so he was returned home to repair. As soon as he was fit, he volunteered to go to Iraq. He went to Iraq, and his other leg was blown off. And he just did this sort of zero to hero course, and got his yacht master offshore from being a pretty much a beginner. He did that at UKSA about 2 years ago, and he'd been racing with us. He's coming out to Annapolis. The Annapolis Naval Academy are giving us sort of mooring and lift out facilities for a couple of months. So it works on a sort of, we've got each other's backs, really. A complete mix.
I have to ask, there does seem an enormous difference between cruising around the Caribbean islands and life as it must be on active duty in Afghanistan. How do you make that leap, if you like?
Well, I think soldiers naturally do that. They won't worry about how you're going to do it until they first of all say, yeah, we'll do it, and then you work out the detail afterwards. But I think it's sort of working in a sort of, you know, a team environment. You work it out and you make it work, and they're pretty resilient. I mean, I think there's a cruising around the Caribbean islands isn't how I would describe the 600. It was no cruise.
I admit.
it was a physically tough race, and I think that's what these guys, you know, live up to. You know, they'll keep hammering at it, and sort of pushing the boat when you're beating a 90-mile beat upwind in those conditions was physically hard work. I think they're good for that.
Now, I have to ask, you mentioned the 1989 Whitbread race there, and I'd love to hear your experiences of that on another day. The Volvo Ocean Race are doing a Legends regatta for all previous boats. Is there a chance that the Army might sort of be able to get to Alicante and relive some of those moments?
I think so. I mean, I've not been personally involved with that. I know a couple of the guys that were on the race all those years ago, along with me, have been involved. I've not made any commitment to it, but I know some of the others have, Tim Morris and various others who are on our crew. We had a boat, British Defender, it was an 8-foot maxi, which was, again, a huge learning curve, because there were actually only very few people in the Army and in the services who really understood that size and type of boat. And I think there was a view at the time that we could take this on as an adventure training trip, you know, and change the crew every other leg. And I remember saying at the time, I think that's a bit unrealistic, because you'll break the boat and bend people. And we did in part. A bit of a learning curve. I think we will have some involvement, but I'm not sure whether it'll be any large scale one.
Well, it sounds as if you'll be a little bit on the busy side anyway this year with all the other campaigns. Is this now going to be an ongoing project? Do you see this sort of running? You've mentioned that you've been on the last two seasons. Is this now an ongoing project?
I think this one is a one-off. I mean, this Atlantic Ocean Racing Series, I don't know if that's intended to be a sort of continuing series of events. I saw this as a one-off project. What we do next year, we haven't got around to thinking about yet. We'll see how the boat is. I mean, you know, we're very much the smallest boat in the fleet. We're the second smallest for the 600. Yeah, I mean, it's quite something to be racing against these sort of 100-foot super fast maxis, which were pretty impressive. So what we're going to do next year, don't know. It might be a conventional Rourke series, Rourke season again. Don't know yet. Too early to say.
Well, we'll watch this space. But a final thought, Nick, is sort of how important, given what the guys do as their day job, is having a project like this to look forward to, if you like, after a tour?
Seeing the effects, seeing all the comments back from the guys that have just got off the boat, they had a real blast. It's absolutely brilliant for morale, for starters. But, you know, these are guys used to working as a team, whether in an infantry section, commanding an armored vehicle, you know, a tank. It's a crew. It's a vessel which requires a crew to work together. So racing a yacht works well for, you know, within the army ethos, I think. But no, brilliant for morale. And yeah, I have no shortage of people wanting to come and do these races this year.
Well, with Ben Ainslie, a man who, well, I'm not even going to bother to introduce him actually this time. But Ben, you've done all sorts of events. You've won Olympic golds, you've sailed in America's Cups. What does the Round the Island race mean, though, to you?
It's a very special event, the Round the Island race. I think just the history and the pure number of boats and competitors involved. When you get out there on the start line and you see thousands of boats and, you know, so many people on one start line, and on such a sort of unique course, it's a very, very special event. And of course, the conditions are always different. Normally, the type of boat you race on is always different. So it's great experiences, and I think it's such an inclusive event, from, you know, top sailors down to people who probably may even be the first time they've been on a boat. So yeah, really great event all round.
Any particularly good or indeed bad memories of your Round the Island races?
In general, they've all been pretty good, actually. I've been pretty fortunate with the weather. Had one quite slow race, believe it or not, when I was on an Extreme 40 catamaran, which should have been one of the fastest boats and probably was, but there was very little wind, and so it took a while. Some pretty hairy races. One year I did it on a J80, a small sports boat, and we had some pretty strong winds, so 25, 30 knots all day. And it was fantastic. It was a really wild ride, and we had a great time.
Now, when people see you on a boat next to them, do you get the sense that they're thinking, "Oh, I've got a chance to beat Ben Ainslie here"?
Normally not. Normally you just get abused. I've done quite a lot of racing in the Solent around Cowles Week, and also obviously with the Round the Island race. And I guess they don't really expect that you're there or know who's on the boat. And you find yourself in some very funny situations where you're pretty sure that you're in the right way or you're in control, and somebody will be screaming abuse at you and telling you, you know, you don't know what you're doing, you shouldn't be on the road. That's really quite interesting.
Now, there's a lot of people who have been sailing longer than you here. How does it sort of feel to fit into that sailing heritage, if you like, and see the guys who started doing this race more than 50 years ago?
Oh, that's right. It's fantastic to see some of the older sailors here, and the photos from, you know, 50 odd years ago, and just, you know, quite often you think back to those days and you think they were really sailing because of the equipment that they had. It was that much tougher. And these days, you know, we laugh about whizzing round in an Extreme 40 catamaran in 2.5 hours, and isn't that great? But, you know, 50 years ago they were really doing it hard, and no, it's great to see so much history and hear some fantastic stories of our maritime heritage.
Final question, really. Who are you sailing with this year, and what are you expecting, if you like?
I actually don't know. JP Morgan Asset Management, who sponsored the race, has helped me with my Finn campaign for the Olympics, so I'm sure it'll be something involved with them. And every year it's been great fun, so whatever boat I'm on, I'll look forward to it. And of course, we don't know yet what the weather will be like this year, but I think, you know, with it being the 80th anniversary, it'll be extra special, and I hope we have a great day.
Well, if JP Morgan Asset Management don't take Ben, anybody listening who needs crewmen, get in touch.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, thanks.
Well, that's it from this latest edition of Jibe Talking. Join us next time for all the latest news from the world of sailing. And in the meantime, remember to check in at regular intervals to the brand new Volvo Ocean Race website, www.volvooceanrace.com.